Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pixels and Profits. We are back. It's been a little bit since we have last spoken, and today we are going to do a little bit of a deep dive into Unity's business and discuss the outlook for the company, especially in light of a lot of open questions and recent news, especially the pricing changes, which we'll get into. But I thought we could kick it off with a high-level overview of Unity's business. And again, you have myself, Joseph Kim, Matthew Contraman, and Brian Peganoff, aka the Pixel Brothers. Today's episode is sponsored by Data.ai to access estimates for rankings, downloads, revenue, usage, or engagement for millions of apps on the App Store and Google Play. Sign up for Data.ai. But guys, feel free to jump in as I talk about the high level of Unity's business, just to set the stage for our audience. But the way that I think, the simple way for our audience to understand Unity's business is that it's really two parts. Unity kind of describes themselves as a real-time 3D, the world's leading platform to provide real-time 3D development tools, right? I don't know how much of the real-time aspect is in there. It seems a little bit more of a buzzword thing. But anyway, that's how they describe themselves. But the business itself actually is comprised of something that they call one segment, which is Create, and the other segment, which they call Grow. Now, on the Create side, it's basically a suite of developer tools and services. The main component of this is the application development framework Unity Engine, which is a thing that most people are familiar with. And I won't go into the details of it, but there's a lot of other stuff as part of Create. Parsec, which is tools for distributed teams, SyncSketch, tool that enables visual communication, Ziva, SpeedTree, there's Unity Asset Store. There's also like services for like DevOps, like a CI/CD, which is continuous integration, continuous deployment kind of tool, version control tool. They've got multiplayer solution stuff like Multiplay, which is server orchestration. There's Matchmaker. There's the many doomed attempts at netcode solutions, relays, game server hosting. They've got voice, text chat, lobby. They've got also data analytics, which was Delta DNA solution. So just to kind of summarize it all up, on the Create side, you got a bunch of dev tools, the primary part of which is the Unity development framework. And an important note around that framework is that 70% of the revenue for Create comes from gaming. So Unity is actually highly dependent on the gaming industry. And one of the reasons why I think when the game industry kind of went up in arms around the pricing changes, they're kind of forced to respond because so much of their business does depend on gaming. Okay, on the just a quick note on Create, they will also have a couple of AI products, Muse and Census. There's not a whole lot of information on that. They're also trying to switch stuff to Unity Cloud, which is a platform I believe is mainly to help them monetize licenses easier. But anyway, there's that coming up within Create. And then let's talk about the second part of the business, which is Grow. And Grow, again, at the high level, and just to kind of simplify and summarize here, is a collection of ad-based products and its game publishing business, which often some people forget about. So Grow includes ad mediation, ad networks, and ad exchanges from Unity and also from its acquisition of IronSource. They've got the old TapJoy OfferWall products and, again, Supersonic. Now, I think the one key product to understand that is part of Grow is the ad mediation product, LevelPlay. Now, some of you may have heard about LevelPlay because of all the stuff happening with the Unity pricing changes. But just so you understand, it's an ad mediation product, meaning an ad mediation product is basically an SDK product that allows a publisher or game developer to manage multiple ad networks. So it controls kind of the inventory that's seen by players of a game in terms of the ads that they see, and you can kind of set floors and ceilings and you can kind of like manage the pricing and things like that with the ad mediation product. Now, another important thing to understand for the audience is that Unity was getting their ass handed to them in ad mediation by AppLovin. So they've got this product called Max, and Max was just destroying. It was taking up a lot of revenue and a lot of the market. And so We'll talk about pricing later, but you know, it is reasonable to believe that part of the pricing change that was initiated by Unity was part, could be speculative, partially motivated by trying to bundle sales, like trying to get a lot of their customers to switch from Max to Level Play. And the tricky part of that is that tie-in sales or bundling sales is actually illegal. But that's the high-level overview. Let me kind of stop there. Matthew, Brian, did I leave anything out? Is there any other way that you would kind of characterize any of Unity's products or services that they offer?
You hit the big ones, the important ones. There's things like Multiplay, which is also, I think, part of Grow, which used to be called Operate. And, you know, that's like, you know, it's used by Apex Legends, even though that's built on Unreal, right? So there are things inside of their business that are used beyond the Unity engine, but you hit the most important pieces for sure in terms of dollars, because, you know, I'm on the profit side, and that's P-R-O-F-I-T. That's not P-R-O-F-H-E-T. I'm not a profit that way. You know, and you noted and you put in our notes the 2022 financials, but remember that only included about a month of ironSource, right? So in 2022, you know, revenue was slightly in favor of Create versus Grow. You know, Create was $716 million of revenue and Grow was $675 million, but that only included about a month of ironSource. If we look at the second quarter of 23, which includes, it's a full quarter of ironSource, right? Create was $193 million and Grow was $340 million. So it's almost twice as large now. Okay. You know, instead of being about 50-50, it's about 2/3 and 1/3 now. And so this is much more of a business, at least from a, you know, revenue and profitability perspective, particularly profitability, because the engine business makes no money, is entire, you know, it's largely driven by Admon and their ability to be with AppLovin for, as you said, mediation.
Right. And maybe one thing to underscore there is also just the one thing that Unity has been doing well, not necessarily profit, because I don't think they've shown a single profitable quarter, but revenue growth. So from 2020, revenue of $770 million, 21, $1.1 billion, 22, $1.4 billion. And to your point, Matthew, we'll likely see greater contribution from ironSource in 23. So on that side, I think there's, you know, they've been doing well, and maybe we could discuss this, because I, one of the problems I do have with what's been happening at Unity and is kind of a product of the zero interest rate policy environment, the ZERP environment that we've been a part of, is just revenue growth. And so I feel, and you know, we could talk about now or later, but I feel that management has been a little bit too focused on revenue growth and not as focused on creating value for their customers, which kind of leads me to this other key metric that that Unity likes to focus on, which is dollar-based net expansion rate. Before we jump into that, Brian, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think if you're talking about revenue growth historically for Unity, I think you also need to divide up where that was moment in time again. They had just recently IPO'd, I believe, in 2021. Matt, correct me if I'm wrong. They also benefited from, you know, lockdowns and COVID pandemic era, because there was a huge proliferation of mobile gaming over that time period that was fueled by the non-zero interest rate phenomenon, right? A lot of new entrants into the space. UA was relatively easier because there was more organic users, more people were spending time in games and spending money on those games. But since that has lapsed, and the preponderance of their kind of new user flow into that engine's ecosystem was from the hyper-casual arena, which has been hit precipitously hard over the past, you know, year or so. And it's probably like the biggest target of this price delta increase, because it drove the vast preponderance of download growth for the industry over the past 3 or 4 years. Like, that's probably all that at that point, but I know you want to go into some metrics around retention. So that would be a good segue.
Before we get there, I just want to jump in. You know, this is, if we kind of look at it, how it's growing on a pro forma basis. So as if ironSource was part of the business the whole time, the Create business grew 17% in the second quarter and subscriptions were up 22%. if you remember, and Brian just mentioned it, they did price increases at the end of last year, and that's slowly been filtering through the business. They will get a tailwind from that for a few quarters, but if you take that out and you look at the grow solutions, the admon is only up 7%. It went back to growth for the first time in a while, but only 7%. So if you look out a few quarters into sometime next year, subscriptions aren't going to grow 22% year on year once the impact of the price increases is flowed through. You're looking at a single digit growth company that barely generates any EBITDA. They're targeting $2 billion of EBITDA by the end of next year. That was part of the rationale for the ironSource deal, was simply to get more profitable, because ironSource was at least a profitable business on an EBITDA basis. That is a very difficult story to tell. And so when we start talking about the price increases and kind of the rationale, the AI story fell on deaf ears. They tried to tell the market that they're an AI company last quarter, right?
Who doesn't have an AI story? Everybody has an AI story.
We're talking about AI tools, and nobody batted an eye, and the stock didn't really move off of that. They need a story for 24 to keep the market excited. Price increases on the admon side through level play, through monetization growth, is likely why they're thinking about it now.
Right.
Just to add to your prior comment, Joe, about revenue growth being a main motivating factor for companies, like, we're seeing this across all of TMT, all of consumer products, right? Like, how many price increases have you got on your OTP products, like your video on demand products, over the past 6 to 8 months? Spotify's done it. Netflix has done it. We just saw Fortnite raise prices on V-Bucks a couple days ago, right? It's like everyone's trying to monetize an existing audience better because they're lacking audience growth. And it's also a hard environment to acquire new users. So easiest way to take price is to crank up the lever. And we're seeing varied reactions to that across, again, all of tech.
Yeah. And I think, just to underscore your point, Brian, about being in a different environment, I think that's something we should talk about a little bit later on as well. But I do think it's important for our audience to understand we are in a new world. There was a bunch of this COVID growth in gaming. We're not in a free money environment anymore. And so the metrics and kind of like the focus of management, in my opinion, has to shift. And I think that some management teams at certain companies that have been operating in a certain way, in Unity's case, I would argue that they're basically spending a lot of time with bankers and management consultants on how do we drive revenue growth. And I think that this next metric that we'll talk about, in my opinion, is one of the symptoms of this kind of mentality. And Matthew had mentioned to me that a lot of SaaS companies focus on dollar-based net expansion rate, but let's talk about this. And so this is a metric that Unity, if you go through their financials, highlights a lot, and that they have been measuring themselves against. And dollar-based net expansion rate, this is basically a metric that tells you how much additional money can you get from your customers on a year or over year basis. And I believe that the implication of focusing on this metric from Unity is that they believe, in my opinion, that they have been under monetizing their customers, and that they believe there's a ways you can go. And so in 2020, this metric, dollar-based net expansion rate, was 138%, meaning they were able to generate 38% more revenue per customer than before. 2021, 140%. And 2022, it then dropped to 116%. And so what we've seen is a little bit of a dip. And I guess the point that I want to make is that if we are in a different environment, I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and hopefully I don't make too many enemies at Unity, but I think that the way that management has been thinking about their business is going to have to shift from not how much money can we extract from our customers, but how much value can they create for their customers, right? And so, as an example, if you look at, and I know Elon Musk is a controversial figure. Some people like him, some people don't. But, he clearly states the number one metric for Twitter, now X, is unregretted user minutes. It's not how much money can we make from our users. It's how valuable can we create an experience for our users. And maybe I can get your feedback on this as well, but would you guys agree with me? Do you guys think that we are in a different environment? Maybe we talk about that now. And is a current management team set up to kind of compete in this new environment? And with, in my opinion, what is required of a different philosophy in order to be successful?
It's the existential crisis of subscription software, right? The land and expand strategy only works as much as the end markets are growing and people are willing to reinvest in new products. But at the same time, you're never going to monetize a significant share of the end market TAM to justify significant valuations on a pure subscription model. Whereas if you have something that that scales with volume, a volume-based pricing strategy, right? You know, think Shopify, right? Shopify is a volume-based pricing software company, right? They sit in between e-commerce and payments effectively, right? And they kind of manage stores for sellers online. If you're volume-based, then you do scale with the end market. As the end market grows, you're taking a share of that. But this happened to Unity, and this is why the DBNE went down in 2022. When the end market declines and your revenue is based on end market, that means your revenue goes down. From at least, you know, we saw that in the grow business, the AdMon business, right? So it's kind of the damned if you do, damned if you don't, where if you want stability and you want a pure SaaS business, you're always going to be limited by price increases or seat growth. Those are basically the only ways to drive growth. And to your point, it's based on how much value you generate for your customers and any upselling possibilities you can do on the SaaS, or you go after a volume base and you take the volatility that comes with it.
Yeah, I think Matt hit the nail on the head. And if I were to just extrapolate your Twitter example a bit, so if Twitter's outcome is to increase minutes spent, a direct corollary with Unity would be the most active and robust and large user base they could possibly have as an outcome. And I think, you know, for software, that boils down to a few different things. One is certainly the end market that we just talked about, like how healthy is that? Is that growing? The second is more around how do you widen the funnel for users? Like, how do you make this product easier to use, easier to pick up, removing errors and workflow issues? Like, how do you make this applicable to a larger audience? And, you know, just my feedback from developers over time, and John, you have a much more nuanced opinion on this than I do. The price hikes have been less, they have a little bit of a bitter taste because a lot of developers feel like they haven't kept up that end of the bargain, right? Like Unity has built its reputation and its ease of use characteristics around the community, not for it necessarily. And so if developers run into issues where they're trying to figure out a problem or if there's something in place, there's like a deep community forum. There's a lot of folks that are willing to help. And that's what kind of got alienated. And that's what's more concerning to me about the direction of the business, because if without that, your usability and ease of use goes down quite a bit. And that, tapers your funnel quite a bit as well. So, you know, you can make the case that Unity might be as large as it's going to be from a user perspective, 2 weeks ago, which I think is not a good setup for a stock necessarily.
Right. It's
part of the reason they continue to push the narrative about their growth beyond gaming, right? Because metaverse is a long-term thing that people are building to, and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but digital twins is a real thing. There are companies out there using Unity that are non-gaming companies. For a while, they were giving it away for free and just saying, hey, X percent of our users are non-gaming. Now they started charging them and haven't seen material amounts of churn yet, but it doesn't mean that there won't be, or there just won't be the seat growth in those businesses. For example, an auto company that's using Unity to do design instead of doing it in Autodesk or Adobe, you kind of made a joke about real time, but real time versus static 3D design effectively, right? Designing elements in real time versus static 3D. There could be pluses and minuses to doing either way, but at some point, if it's going to cost you too much money, you're going to opt for the cheaper option or the more cost effective option.
Right.
And Unity is increasingly competing with Ansys, Autodesk, Adobe, et cetera, Cadence Design, in these markets where previously there really wasn't competition for mobile. Unreal has started to be there, but JK, you kind of said it. Unreal is not built for mobile and it's not scaled, especially when you're thinking about, the majority of devices in emerging markets that aren't leading edge iPhones with leading processors, right? There's a, you know, so I think when you think about Unity's position in gaming, it's strong because there isn't really a plan B for a lot of people. But that's why they've been trying to grow beyond to show any growth potential. And it's kind of just been flailing.
Yeah, I think that just to provide a little bit more context in terms of Unity versus Unreal, at least in the mobile context, I do think you can make a performant game using Unreal for mobile, but it's a lot more difficult. And it requires more technical expertise and sophistication to optimize those games. And so, like, for example, PUBG, before it was banned, was in Unreal in India, but, you know, it did not have the full support for like the lowest end devices. And so, yeah, that's just like the trade-off that people are going to have to try and understand. I do think that competitively in the future, there are things I'm hoping to see from Unreal where they'd make it a little bit easier for mobile developers. But I do think we should talk about the pricing changes. And I think we should also probably have a bigger discussion in terms of the outlook for Unity and maybe the current competitive environment. But before that, maybe we could just close the loop on the Unity business itself. And a couple other things we should probably talk about is the Unity China business and stock-based comp. Matthew, you want to run us through Unity China, because this is something that I know a lot of people are not aware about.
It kind of went under the radar when they announced it in August 2022, because they announced a whole slew of things at that time. Mm-hmm. They announced a partnership with Microsoft for Unity is now available on Azure, right? So they put out like 12 press releases at once, and this was the 12th of them. But for me, this kind of stood out. So they actually spun out their entire China business, excluding the ads business, because advertising in China is just weird and we don't have to get into that. But they spun out the most of the China business into a new joint venture. Unity kept 50% plus one vote, so they still keep control and they consolidate the business. But basically everyone in China that's involved in tech or internet or consumer entertainment, except for Tencent, bought a stake. So ByteDance, MiHoYo, I think NetEase was in there. Pretty much everyone but Tencent, because Tencent owns a large chunk of Epic and Unreal, right? Pretty much everyone else bought into this joint venture. My take on this at the time was this was actually targeted more at Unity trying to gain share for digital twins with SOEs and government customers in China, because this was right around the time they were waking up to the metaverse and thinking about how digital twins can be efficient for the government. And there is no 3D, you know, domestic 3D engine of any, you know, of any scale, right? Most of the developers there use Unity or Unreal. And so, they saw this as a way to, yeah, we'll get relationships with our existing gaming customers, but we'll also, you know, by selling stakes to local partners, you open up the SOE and the government route for digital twins. So I think that was a big driver there. Hasn't really been a shift change in the games business for them in China. Tencent was already kind of going all in on Unreal anyways. They owned at one point 40% of Epic, and I think it's been diluted a little bit since then, but it's still probably north of 35% at this point. And just seeing this probably, you know, only solidify their course, but they were already on a course to kind of go all in on Unreal anyways. And to see them not participate obviously made sense. And, you know, it makes sense that now they go all in on Unreal because, you know, everyone else, their competitors own a stake of Unity China.
Right. And maybe just to provide a little bit of context, and just to be clear to the audience, this is all kind of speculation and rumor, but the word on the street is that, there was a good relationship between Tencent and Unity prior to 2022, but in early 22, something happened between the Unity China team or Unity and Tencent. And so Tencent effectively blackballed Unity. And I think that, and then after that, you know, apparently management fired everyone in China on the Unity side because of the Tencent issue, but also just kind of speaking to like this JV and all these other game companies kind of taking a stake in it is because they're, you know, again, speculation rumor is that, you know, these companies wanted greater control of the product roadmap and the direction of the company. They did not trust the current management. So,
speculation. Yeah, remember Call of Duty Mobile is built in Unity.
That's right.
And Tencent made that. That was 2019. So that was before this kind of dust up that kind of led Tencent to go all in on Unreal. But you know, now then you saw PUBG is Unreal, the domestic version Peacekeeper is Unreal, right? So they have started shifting. It was for a while they let the studios decide what they wanted to use. So Lightspeed used Unreal, and Timmy was using Unity, but they cut that off.
Yeah.
No view on the speculation for what it's worth, but the theme makes sense, right? Because I think over the past few years we've seen the tendency of larger publishers, AAA publishers, to use external engines for the first time in the history of the gaming industry. But this might, you know, call that into question, predominantly with around the price rate increase as well.
Okay.
Tencent's a huge customer to get. I mean, that's a pretty big loss if that was the case.
Huge.
They have a lot of the mobile market.
Right. So let's talk about something very interesting. And one of the biggest bones I have to pick with Unity's management team, and that is stock-based compensation for, I wouldn't say for employees, for management, and for JR in particular. Matthew, you want to kind of characterize that for us?
Yeah. And then I'll flip it to Brian after, you know, he's got thoughts as well. So that 2021, 2022 crop of IPOs of consumer tech, entertainment, software companies that went public, they were not ready to be public companies, and they all came out. Their cost structures were inflated. They were focused only on revenue growth, like we were talking about with Unity. And among that cost structure, that was inflated to stock-based compensation, which can come in many flavors and forms: options, RSUs, PSUs, whatever it is. All of that is bad because that's dilutive to existing shareholders. If you bought Unity at the IPO, not only you're underwater on price, but they've diluted the equity outstanding. They continued to issue more stock through stock-based compensation. So even if the stock price was flat, your ownership stake in the company gets diluted and goes down because there's more stock outstanding. And for a lot of growth companies, there's a trade-off. You know, in this environment, in this day and age, and you know, maybe in 6 months this will change and stock won't be necessary to attract talent because the economy is softening. But you know, for a long time, you had to use your equity currency as a retention tool or as a way to attract talent. And no one debates the merits of that. It's the scale to which you do that. For Unity in 2022, stock-based compensation was 38.5% of their revenue. And in the first half of 23, it was 31% of revenue. So they're spending a lot of money on handing out free stock to employees, right? And, you know, Brian, I'm going to jump the gun on you, but, you know, you noted it, and it's a good point that stock-based compensation for a company like this should be round about 10% at the high end, maybe a little bit lower than 10%, maybe high single digits. So we're talking triple the amount that people would expect. Because what you really want when you see a company giving stock-based compensation, you want to see a path to cash flows, to positive free cash flow, so that the free cash flow, they can eventually buy back stock and offset the dilution. If you look at a company like EA, one of the most impressive things that they've done in the last, honestly, decade since they've really like right-sized their financial management, they've just bought back stock consistently. They've more than offset dilution. So they've actually reduced the shares outstanding in the market quite substantially over the last several years. That's good for shareholders. That means that the investments they're making with their equity pays off because they're generating enough cash flows to cover that dilution and offset it, right? And if you just kind of look and you say, well, Unity's market cap is X. I mentioned this the last time we talked about Unity. There's 90 million shares of stock that's excluded from the calculation that if they were to ever make a profit on an EPS basis, 90 million more shares get added to the calculation for EPS. So there's a lot of stock outstanding from convertible bonds, from RSUs, from PSUs that isn't in that calculation of shares outstanding yet. And you know, I'm not here to debate the merits of specific compensation agreements. JR has sold a lot of stock in the last several years. People mentioned that when the news about the price increases came out. But at the end of the day, these types of deals for execs, for you know, key employees, for stock-based compensation are a necessary evil. And you know, I think a lot of stock analysts accept that. It's the degree to which you do that. And for a company like Unity, you know, this is a case where it's clearly more than the degree to which is expected. And that's what's worrisome. And until they can rein in their compensation and dilution to existing equity holders, it's really tough to say that they've really strangleholded all of their expenses, including stock-based compensation.
Yeah, I think this would be a little more palatable if Unity was architected a bit more like a high growth SaaS company that it's trying to emulate. As you noted, generally investors want to see SBC like 1/2 to 1/3 of the ratio of Unity is like at most. But you'd get some flexibility around like a multi-year Rule of 40 name, like a Workday or ServiceNow or Adobe or CRM back Salesforce back in the day. So some flexibility, but the multiples in that space are also way higher, right? You get 15 times your revenue at least, depending on the market environment and backdrop, versus Unity more in the mid-singles range. So those companies we just mentioned scale into the 5 billion plus revenue range after a period of rapid scaling. Well, the successful ones do anyway. And then many exit to an acquirer like Salesforce or Adobe or Microsoft or Amazon. The problem that Unity is facing is that revenue growth is like high single digits in the software business the most recent quarter after taking price the prior year. And again, this is before the pricing announcement, which we still haven't covered somehow. So like how we refer to the deal that Activision made for King, right? They took eventually over time, like a console and PC multiple on King. But that's the exact opposite happened here, right? Like Unity bought an ad tech company hoping to ramp into a SaaS multiple because of that, because it's repeatable, it's recurring, whatever, but ended up being valued wholly as an ad tech company, including their software business. So like, you know, long story short, the quantum of SBC paid to Unity is too high relative to the growth and health of the business, which is, you know, again, why it's such a big highlight.
Yeah, and I think for me, I saw a tweet from one of the friends of our podcast here, Dr. Serkan Toto, who I'm a fan of. And this tweet had mentioned that I think GR made $420 million with insider stock sales in the last 3 years. I haven't confirmed that, but wow, you know, for a company that has not shown a profitable quarter, has highly negative free cash flow, it's just like, I don't understand who's minding the ship, right? It's just like the board there is asleep at the wheel.
This is also, I mean, and this is an ESG conversation to a degree because this hits on the governance side, but a lot of these companies don't have independent boards. JR is on the board of Unity and he's the CEO, right? He's not the chairman, but he's on the board. A lot of these companies, there's a lot of cases where CEO is the chairman of the board or the CEO sits on the board and there's a lack of independence in the other board members. If you look at the board members of Unity, a lot of them are either from Iron Source or, you know, they're friendly with the other board members. And so there isn't independence to kind of, you know, firewall these compensation agreements. And that's worrisome for shareholders. I mean, you saw Exxon, right? There was a ESG fund that went after Exxon, you know, what was this, 18 months ago now. And, you know, shot down board members and actually won seats on the board because they were fighting against, you know, a lack of independence on the board, right? And so this is worrisome if you're, you know, ESG is a buzzword and it's gotten bastardized and abused in the investment world, but these are considerations when you're thinking about executive compensation. Is there an independent perspective really thinking about how to structure compensation agreements for executives in situations where these same executives are on the board?
In some cases, I mean, this is not unique to Unity either. Both EA and Activision have both had their fits and bouts with this. But we have to remember, again, that those are $9 billion plus in revenue, 20 to 30% margins, launch multiple games per year. And the executive comp paid to those CEOs is a small fraction of what JR gets from Unity.
They've also been public companies for much longer, and they're much more mature in how they act. You know, JR's compensation, you know, part of it was also granted pre-IPO, right? So a lot of that was, you know, to a degree, he was a mercenary CEO, right? There's a lot, this happens in a lot of cases, not unique to JR. You know, people that have run public companies go to late stage private companies and sign these compensation agreements that says, hey, if you successfully IPO the company and it's trading, you know, X percent above the IPO price after so many days, you get all this free stock. Like that is very common. Despite how it looks from the outside when they end up going and selling $420 million of stock post hoc.
And for every one of those stories where there's a huge grant increase, there's, you know, 80% of those companies end up failing or whatever, never IPO or get sold for pennies. So it's, you know, we tend to highlight those edge cases that end up working out fantastically well for the CEO, but forget about the all the mediocre ones in between.
Okay. Should we close? Do you guys have any thoughts on some of their M&A activity? I know there's been a bunch, and that's been part of how they've grown. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on M&A before we talk about pricing changes and other things.
Yeah, thoughts. Even pre-IPO, Unity was a very acquisitive company. And if you just go through kind of their S1 before they IPO'd, you can see a lot of the deals they did. They progressively went from small little acqui-hire tuck-in deals to, you know, buying larger teams and plugging holes in their product suite to post-IPO some of these deals that make no sense. Not quite on the Embracer scale of deals that make no sense, but, you know, I think if Embracer didn't exist and didn't do the things they did, we might be talking about Unity as the craziest acquisitive company before ironSource. I think ironSource actually made a lot of sense, and we've debated that. But, you know, if you look at some of the deals they did, I mentioned Multiplay in the beginning. Multiplay was acquired, right? You know, they have, you know, they've scaled up the deal since then. But kind of when they came out and announced the Weta Digital, W-E-T-A, I don't know if it's Weta or Weta or whatever you pronounce it, but Peter Jackson's VFX company, for $1 billion, made absolutely zero sense, right? Their stock was at its highs. They issued convertible debt against that to pay this. They issued equity. They paid whatever cash they had. This was just a massive bet on real-time 3D penetrating film and video creation, right? You know, we've seen The Mandalorian uses game engines, right, for setting the scenes. All like, cool, but spending $1 billion against that made zero sense. No one liked this deal, and that was basically the top for the stock. And then it went from in the 200s down to what, you know, $10 a share or whatever, right? So ironSource made sense because their AdMon business had lots of holes. They weren't competitive with AppLovin, particularly on mediation and on the publishing. They needed what ironSource had to be competitive in that space. You can debate the merits of being short-sighted, focused on supporting the AdMon business and focusing on the business of today and profitability versus the long-term goal of growing creative software outside of gaming. But, you know, in terms of the near-term plugging the holes in the ship, this was the deal that had to be done, and it was structured in a way that actually made sense for them. So I don't have too much to say about ironSource, but the Weta Digital deal they burnt $1 billion, and those converts, I think the convert price is over $300 on those bonds that were issued. Like, those are never going in the money, never, just never, ever getting close to that.
Yeah, I think mostly agree. I think the ironSource deal, I tend to agree with you on that as well. I think moment in time, it looked weird, right? Because optically that space was in a bit of a odd spot, right? Like ad tech in general. But they did successfully purchase a significant amount of revenue and profitability, which were two things that were really hitting their story pretty hard, right? So for the time that deal has existed, it did change the fundamentals in the company quite a bit. But, you know, it's hard to go back and say that was like a great deal, but it was necessary for sure.
All right.
Things to say about ironSource than I do about Weta Digital. So I think that's how I stack rank them and grade the deals.
Yeah, I think Weta, I believe, returned a revenue source to Unity as well, right? There was some sort of long-term contract, which is kind of like you're buying your customer, then raising prices on them. So it doesn't seem super scientific, but I'm not aware of the long-term plans for Weta Digital.
All right, so maybe two other discussion topics. Now we can get into some of the meat of kind of what's happening today and the future is essentially, let's talk about the Unity pricing changes and the runtime fees.
Right. I can't believe it's taking us like an hour and a half to get there. Well, I think that's going to kick off.
39 minutes.
I think we set the stage well. We talked about how did Unity get to where it is today?
Yeah.
Come out with this. And that's important because what we've shown you, this is a business that, aside from price increases, has struggled to grow. And the part of the business that's supposed to scale with the end market isn't growing, so that can't scale. And it's under pressure from competition. So what are they doing in response to that? They're raising prices. They're finding other ways to raise prices to offset other macro end market pressures. And the runtime fee is, there's the financial engineering side to it, and then there's the how they put this out in the wild side of it, right? They did a horrible job of messaging this. The PR failed. The conversations with customers failed. All of that is well documented, and you know, we can talk about what that means from saving face for the management team when they changed course, but that was horrible. But in terms of them looking at the business and saying, we don't think the advertising market is going to grow materially in the near future because of all of these reasons, we need to find a way to raise prices to grow our top line and extract more value from our customers because we believe that we're providing value to them that we're not fully monetizing. That may be true or not, but their analysis had to show that to them. And so when they came out with this runtime fee, it didn't seem like it was fully well thought out. It seemed like it was created inside of spreadsheets with consultants. It seems like they didn't talk to customers. They said they did, but I think if they would have talked to any customer of any size, they would have quickly realized.
It would have been very clear.
It would have been very clear, right? They could have talked to JK and they would have known very quickly how dumb this was. JR, you know, if you should reach out next time before you make a decision. So in terms of the changes they made in capping the fees at 2.5% of revenue, it's only on games built on the next version of Unity, launching next year. All these things are more palatable. And when you start to think about, is it also just a funnel for their mediation software Level Play and that they're going to give whatever term that's not going to legally get them into antitrust issues, waivers or, you know, credits or whatever bundling they're going to do to push people into Level Play, it starts to make sense. But on the other side of the coin, the financial boost from, you know, I think, Brian, you said it nicely. The original plan was a 13 out of 10 in terms of impact. And when they walked it back, it's not like a 2 out of 10. It's much more marginal and it's not going to have anything to the degree of impact on game makers and game companies and also for Unity than we thought it would when they first announced it.
Yeah. If you think about the selling points from the gaming industry over the past few years, or just gaming industry, right? It's like this $180 to $220 billion industry, depending on who you talk to. It's growing, low teens to mid teens in some years or whatever else. the result that came back with just kind of like starts the chapter all over again. Like, let's set aside that $200 billion industry and we're going to capture a runtime fee on every game that comes out after that. Right. So you're starting from scratch. And you're also bifurcating your software stack in a way that if you're listening to management, they're saying they're going to support the year-end 23 build for the definite future, right? If you want to stay on that version of software, no problem. But then it sets up this new build for 24 plus. It's like, how do they induce folks that have a negative financial outcome of upgrading to upgrade? And that's a weird position for a software stock to be in, or a software company to be in. Not really sure how it's going to play out. I think it's going to be really tough.
Right. And I just want to kind of highlight and underscore again for our audience, why did we set up all the context and information? Because I do think that when you understand the background and the historical context of Unity, then you'll understand why these pricing changes was kind of inevitable. So you've got, you know, management team highly incentivized on stock price, fixated on revenue growth, fixated on metrics like dollar-based net margin expansion, things like that. They're M&A guys, basically, right? And growth guys. And also, as I mentioned before, Max was just killing them, was destroying them. And so part of why I actually believe that part of why the messaging was not as clear is, again, this is speculation for me, because they are trying to do something that might technically be illegal if they're trying to like get people to switch to Level Play from Max using the pricing as a credit. Or I don't want to speculate too much on the legalities of it, but it does seem a little bit fishy to me.
There's ways to do it where you're not breaking rules and getting in trouble. A lot of companies do that, you know, cloud companies do that, right? It's like if you're an Azure customer, but you sign up for Office 365, you get discounted rates on pure Azure infrastructure, right? It's like, so this is kind of status quo in kind of the SaaS world. But no, I'm with you. When you think about kind of the setup for Unity and their ability to not just maintain revenue growth, but, you know, my first analyst that I worked with in research, Brian, you might have similar, you know, experience, told me stocks are numbers with stories. Every stock needs a story to be attractive. And there's no story for Unity in 2024. because the price increases on Create are largely going to be passed through by the time we get to the middle of next year. This is the story for next year. It's price increases on AdMon, or it's growth of Level Play and taking market share from AppLovin. But
I think they're
now that they've kind of neutered that down a little bit, it negates that to a degree.
I think management was trying to kind of think about how they're going to arm their sales force into taking meaningful share away from AppLovin and also growing top line of the business. And so if you break down their first pricing salvo or whatever, they're introducing a new fee, obviously, but they're going to arm their salespeople with this notion that, hey, like the new fee is not going to apply to you as long as you use us for ad mediation, which seems like it's pretty straightforward. Like you don't have to pay anything, just use us. But they misunderstood the complexity of going to game developers with that, because game developers for over a dozen years have been under this assumption that I use Unity because it's really easy to use or whatever. But after I launch my game, I don't pay them anything incremental. I was trying to figure out a way to pour this into daily life. But imagine if you bought a toilet and then eventually they asked you that you had to pay per flush. Like it's not too dissimilar. I know it's a little gross or whatever, but that's the best thing I can come up with. And developers just kind of said no. Like it was enforced too. I did not hear one supportive opinion from a single developer in the entire gaming industry about like, oh, this isn't so bad.
Yeah. And I think to your point, Matthew, when JR is talking to his management team and he's like, well, what's our story? How do we increase dollar-based net margin expansion? I want somebody to show me how we get over 35% dollar-based net margin expansion next year. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of ways you can do that besides what was discussed. And maybe we can now talk about the impact, because I can't disagree with them potentially increasing revenue and having some success with this pricing strategy. But I think the longer term issue, which we can talk about when we talk about future outlook of the company. So I think this is a short-term win, but a long-term destruction of company brand and value. But what do you guys think in terms of the pricing change itself?
I think I've said my piece. I mean, it just went over extraordinarily poorly, right? And I think they came out with very aggressive pitch.
What do you think will be the impact, short, long-term?
Oh, let's do the thing. Right.
So I think this is kind of where I wanted to go next is like, okay. I think there's a couple big questions, right? I think the first is, will the eventual increase in revenue from runtime fees or increase level play revenue, right, whichever way that actually ends up flowing, is that going to offset potential churn of disgruntled customers? So I guess the first question is churning really a viable alternative? Is it viable to move to an alternative solution to Unity, to Unreal, or to one of these other engines? I know AppLovin's working with Godot now, right, which is hilarious that we're
Godot.
Even talking about.
Yeah.
Godot, whatever, exactly. That's how much I know about it, right? But it's like, so is it really a viable alternative for large organizations to just up and pivot to a different provider? And then is that churn going to be more than offset by increased fees?
I think there's two different components to break down there. One is like revenue growth, which would come from games companies moving to the new engine, right? The second part is like the existing gaming industry. What incentive do they have to move over? And like, does this matter at all? Like what company with existing bookings or downloads on Unity now would care to upgrade? The other kind of things that I'm seeing is, a small cottage industry of developers that are doing engine porting work or AI assisted language conversion, like from C to C++, for example. But those things are going to take a lot of time. I'm not sure that anybody that's in, ending seven developing a game on Unity is necessarily going to switch. But I do think they have their, there might be some like early launches and things like that to get them away from this potential outcome where they're due fees in 24 plus.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Unity said they're only going to charge the fees on the new version of the Unity engine software now, right? So that was part of the walk back. And to your point, that makes this a largely nothing burger. I know they said they're going to continue to support older versions, but they didn't put a time frame on that. We all know that means at some point, whether it's 2-3 years, whatever it is down the road, they're going to come out and say, oh, we're going to sunset these versions now. And they're going to fuck people over down the road now. That's just inevitable. And it would just be impossible for them to do this and then never sunset those older versions at some point in the future, because otherwise, what even is the point?
Yeah, and it's really up to game developers too to rally around a new solution, because we already mentioned that part of the driver around Unity is that community feel to it, and that you have a lot of folks making the software better for free, essentially. Is it a Godot as or whoever else? I don't know. Is there like a startup out there that could gain a lot of traction really quickly? Like, we've seen bigger disruptions in tech from smaller software companies in the past, right? Like, ease of use has always won out. But I do think there's a lot more people these days looking for a viable alternative and having like a big push to do it, which could create energy around rallying around another engine of some sort.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Brian, what you're saying, which is that studios like mine, where we've thought about Unreal, but we weren't really motivated. Like, we've had a lot of disappointments with Unity, the management team, execution. Mark Witten was on a podcast recently where, he kind of disagreed that Unity's technology was stagnating, but that's exactly how I would describe it, as stagnating and not really keeping up to pace with recent developments. I see a strong lack of technical execution and things like that. But I think the longer term impact is that people will start seriously evaluating other solutions. We've already been working on some prototypes in Unreal. It is a big pain to switch. It's massively painful, but I think this is one. This is kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of developers like myself, where, and it's emotional too because of that lack of loss of trust, where there's some ways in which you can kind of potentially forgive. Okay, well, these guys aren't executing well. But Unity is still kind of okay. Now we can't trust the management team at all. So we need to seriously, make sure that we risk mitigate ourselves from Unity. So yeah, again, longer term, I think this is going to be a big deal, especially if more viable alternatives emerge. Short term, I think Unity gets their additional revenue and at least some additional revenue, and probably they have short-term wins, in my opinion.
What about winners and losers? You want to do that, Matt?
Yeah, I think that's the next place to go. We talked about a few of these names already. So it's, all right, we've kind of said that, I think it's a net negative for Unity at this point. You guys think it's a net positive mildly net positive.
On the revenue side.
On the revenue side.
I'm not quite there yet.
I think the churn and the loss of confidence is going to more than offset the revenue boost, because I just don't think people will build on the new version of Unity. I mean, it's just like, fuck you. Like, we're just going to build on, older versions of Unity if we're going to stick, and we don't have to pay these stupid fees, and we'll be, we're just going to do our thing, right? But so it's kind of, okay, so we just talked about Epic. So let's go there with Unreal. Do we think that this is is it viable for people to up and switch? We kind of just said it's not easy. But what kind of opportunities Epic have here to kind of gain share on mobile, particularly for the less graphic fidelity rich end of mobile reading, hyper casual? Because that's Unity's bread and butter, right?
Yeah, 100%. Anytime a major competitor shoots themselves in the foot, it's a massive opportunity. Wouldn't surprise me if Epic would invest heavier in mobile, but they do have some wood to chop.
Right. I think the calculation going on at Epic is like, okay, well, devices, like if you look at the graph of technology progress and increase mobile phone device performance relative to Unreal, they're probably weighing, okay, how long would it take us to make a mobile focused, kind of development framework of some kind to compete against Unity versus, well, devices are just going to catch up in like 3 years anyway. So,
yeah. What about AppLovin?
Yeah, I think the next one is AppLovin, and this is more on the admon side and the mediation side. We our last episode we did with we talked about AppLovin and Unity and mediation, right? We did that. That was with Mate, right? That was really good. But do we think that basically saying, all right, we'll use Level Play and we'll debit your fees, is that really going to be a share winner from Max and AppLovin, who's kind of the only game in town right now?
Right. And I think studios want to base decisions on, you know, ROI, not necessarily just relationships with engine vendors. I think it's a little more complicated with AppLovin than Epic, because the fees were designed in part to induce engine customers to use LevelPlay for mediation, like you just said. So it's certainly like a direct salvo against AppLovin, but I'd be hard pressed to say there's a lot of instant momentum for Unity given how everything went down. For App, I think folks are going to start being more focused on October, November timelines regarding iOS changes than anything else. But the spot to watch is certainly the competitive dynamics in mediation.
All right. Well, maybe we could close with growth and future outlook for Unity. What do you guys think?
Yeah. So, you know, Unity, I still think is an attractive business strategically, given the breadth and depth of the engine. But I do think that the pricing changes was a huge net negative for the business, both fundamental and reputational. Again, first, they came out with an aggressive position. They maxed out developer wrath. And ironically, community is their strongest asset. They settle on something far more modest, excludes all games to date, and maintain the same level of developer wrath. There's a good chance this can induce volatility in the near term, I think. I mean, do you think that in a moment in time, 2-3 months ago, when Unity was setting guidance for the quarter, that they had any supposition that this would happen? Probably not. I think it also induced a ton of noise into sell-side estimates. Many banks were raising out-year revenue and EBITDA on the announcement of the pricing, and likely from feedback from Unity, those have not fully come down yet. And there's also multiple instances of Unity games abandoning small shops spinning up to do in-venue conversion, support and knowledge group ceasing operation. So I think, like, from an investor perspective, you need to believe in Unity's ability to be a 20% growth story for the next few years. And I have a really hard time getting there after the pricing news. It was tough enough before. The outlier is whether or not they've been able to compete against App better in real time and benefiting from tailwinds they've induced by this pricing change. I don't see it happening.
I'm long-term negative on Unity. I mean, taking away the technical side of the engine business, I think they said in their S1, there's about 2 million game developers in the world. Like, that's the total TAM of creative software users for them. And if they're charging $2,000 a year, the maximum amount of money they can make from the pure SaaS business is $4 billion a year, plus or minus, you know, without more price increases, which they just did the first price increase in 7 years, 6 years. So it's like, they don't do those that frequently. They can't just start raising prices 10% every year. Like, that's not going to fly well, right? So just on the engine side of the business, it's clear that the digital twins ambitions are a decade out. Like, that's not a near-term story. That's not going to help them anywhere in the near to medium term. So it's a business that's structurally going to struggle to grow as they saturate the user base. And that's before we consider any churn and increased competition from Unreal or from a third party, whatever that may be, or even Roblox, right? Does Roblox become a viable alternative for particularly hyper-casual, right? Like, could a hyper-casual studio say, you know what? Unity is fucking us. Apple is fucking us. Can we build a hyper-casual like environment inside of Roblox and just constantly, you know, have new games inside of a world in Roblox? That's potentially, you know, if Roblox invested more in its ad tech and its UA, that could be something that could be attractive to hyper-casual people down the road. So there is increasing competition on that side of the business. And on the AdMon, their technology isn't as good as AdBlovin. They're basically using bundling to compete with that as opposed to actually improving their technology, right? Matei was telling us you still can't bid on combined ROAS for IAP and advertising revenue. Like, what the heck? This is 2023. Like, isn't that just obvious, right? And so, you know, there's things that just don't make sense from a technology perspective that they are behind their competitors. And so when you put the whole story together, I don't think they have... You know, we've talked about, they don't have the right leadership. They don't have the tech focus. And it's not just the CEO, it's the leadership of the divisions, people overseeing key products. They're more MBA tech PM product leads, and they're not people that understand the technology. And I think they're lacking the real tech leadership that they need to narrow the gap to their competition. And they're making up for that by raising prices and doing financial shenanigans.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that, as I mentioned before, I am long-term negative on Unity. And I just think that, to your point, Matthew, this is not the right management team for the current state of the business. We discussed before the previous ZERP environment, growth, focus on revenue. It's a completely different space now. And so I think what we're going to need is we're going to need a management team at Unity with a technical orientation and really focused around efficiently operating the company. I think the other thing that I didn't mention, but is, I think, something to be noted, is that with any large company, and especially a company that has been kind of stapled together Frankenstein style through a bunch of M&A, that there's all of this bloat and there's all of this like cruft and ossification that happens in these companies. And it's the job of a good CEO to be able to address these problems and make the company more efficient. Now, of the people who have worked at Unity that I have interviewed before, I don't want to draw a lot of conclusions there, but I do think, and just from people in the industry who I've talked to, Unity, for better or worse, and you know, I don't want to go into political issues here, but it does have a big focus on remote work, work-life balance. It's kind of like, and you know, a year before Elon took over Twitter, I had created a video post, I'll put a link in the show notes, where I talked about just how bloated and inefficient Twitter was. And at that time, I actually made a comparison between Jack Dorsey and Elon Musk and said that Jack Dorsey is not Elon Musk. He's not doing a good job of managing the costs in the infrastructure at Twitter. And I would say the same thing about Unity today. I do think if it was managed efficiently and in a more better way, I think Unity could be a great business. And you need a management team that's more focused on the customer and cost, not revenue growth, and not spending, they should be spending less time with bankers and management consultants and more time with customers. I don't think that's where we are. And again, based upon this new environment that we're in, we're in a completely different global, you know, economy and environment. So I think based on that, I'm going to call it, I think this is the end of JR's, this is the beginning of the end for him, in my opinion. And I think unless there's a big change, Unity's long-term not going to make it.
Yeah, I think for what it's worth, this is it's a public company, so we have the option of taking both sides. I do think there needs to be some sort of major reset at Unity, and there are, you know, big opportunities of strategic value if that reset were to occur. And the other thing to note too is like Unity is getting more attention now in the public markets than it has any point in time except for its IPO. The space is certainly in the spotlight. That can induce new kinds of pressure to make change happen, whether that's, you know, replacing management, or maybe they don't need to be that severe, but it's very certain that this is kind of a moment in time they need to respond to.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's tough to say like, hey, fire these people, but I do think that they don't have the right management team for what they need in the next stage of the company. But I do think that if you just kind of look at that crop of 2021, early 22 IPOs and the SPACs and all the new companies, right? There was a lot of them that since then have taken the market shift to heart, and they've right-sized their cost structure. You know, they're executing on the top line maybe later than they said they would, but now they're starting to execute on their growth and they're being realistic about their cost structure. I think when you look at companies like Unity, like Roblox, they're executing on the top line to various degrees, but they've haven't taken the message to heart on the cost structure and being a mature public company and managing for profitability and profitable growth and not just managing for the top line. And that has to change at some point. Like Roblox, when they came out at the beginning of the year and they gave their guidance, and they talked about, you know, their margin targets and how they're going to keep investing. That took everyone by surprise because everyone thought they were going to get much more efficient this year. I'm going to pull back on some of their investments. Unity, you know, I don't think that they have a good feel for their cost structure and how they're going to bring down SBC and how they're going to rein in other sources of costs. I think these companies, until they can really grow up and mature as public companies, it's going to be very tough, aside from trading, because they're extremely volatile and they're great trading vehicles. Aside from trading events, earnings, you know, Apple platform changes, things like that, it's going to be really tough to have long-term views on the stocks until they can really grow up and mature as public companies.
Right. And maybe this should actually serve as a warning, to your point, Matthew, for all the gaming companies out there, all the bigger ones, that we are in a different environment now. You need a management team that is oriented around creating value, not extracting value from customers. One where we need to have, you know, a different kind of focus in terms of focusing on costs, operational efficiency, and not just revenue growth and things like that. So with that, I don't know, any final words from you guys, or should we call it a day?
I mean, just on that point, it's September 28th. We're recording this the day that Epic just laid off 16% of their workforce. Yeah. Like, that's just a nice little, I mean, we don't have to get into it today, but that's, you know, that's kind of an example of what we were just saying. You know, we're debating it in chats and whatnot about, like, you know, who deserves the blame. You know, people are saying the management team should go. I don't think the management team should completely get fired over, you know, a couple bad decisions that were made in a different economic, you know, backdrop that no one predicted. No one predicted interest rates would be close to 6% in 2023, 2 years ago, and here we are. And so people are reacting to the normal that's in front of them, which, you know, may have been beyond the realm of possibilities they considered at the time when they made these deals, they made these decisions, these investments. It's tough out there. I mean, I lost my job recently. It's tough out there, and I'm not going to sit here and, you know, complain. I understand the decision that was made. I was treated very well on the way out, but it's a tough economy. It's a tough environment right now to have visibility to the future. There's so much uncertainty for companies, and you need to be realistic and right size and focus, and not just right size, but reset to your core competencies. And a lot of companies went beyond their core competencies, right? Unity bought Weta Digital. Why is that still part of the business? There's got to be a buyer for those assets at some price. Just get rid of it. It's not core to your business, and focus on what is. Epic got rid of Bandcamp. They got rid of Super Awesome, which were focused on music and kids stuff, right? Not core to what they're trying to do. Even if, you know, spinning it out, they get no money back, at least they don't have to worry about it anymore. And they're resetting to their core competencies. And a lot of companies, even if they have started cost cutting, haven't made those really hard decisions about where to focus their dollars. And that's what's needed in this new normal, besides just, hey, we're just going to trim 10%.
Yeah. And I think the final message, at least for me, is that, to your point, management teams are either going to have to change or die. We are in a completely different environment, and more pain is coming. I'm already hearing about big changes that are going to be occurring at very, very big, well-established companies that you would think would be profitable, but are not. And so there's a lot of pain coming. Again, change or die.
I think everything's going to be okay tomorrow. I'm trying to be the glass half full guy today. Everything's going to be fine, guys.
Sounds good. Yeah. And, you know, if the Fed pivots, who knows, maybe we go back to easy money. And
that's a whole nother podcast. We'll do that next time.
All right. Okay, guys. Well, thanks so much for the discussion, and for our audience, we will catch you next time. Bye.